She can be fiery when you make her mad.
Are you kidding? I'm working.
It's Michelle's turn for the Red Rant.
Look, you can't pull me out of this right now.
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Or on Chase and Michelle. 102.5, 106.3, the game. Well done, Nick.
Actually Rex Road. Sorry, okay, Nick. Well, I'm sorry good. To take your shine. No, but Nick did say that he wanted to play the intro, which is great because it really gets me fired up.
Real quick, before you do that, the Predators have signed defenseman Jake Livingstone to a two-year, two-way contract.
Okay.
He made his debut last year towards the end of the season. Was a free agent, college free agent, and they signed him. And so Barry Trotz announced today, two-year, two-way worth $775,000 at the NHL level. So a little depth move there, guy that, you know, I thought played well when he made an appearance. So going ahead and getting him locked up. So just
good
saw that coming
too.
Through.
Good value for
great
him,
value.
2 years, two-way.
Floor is yours.
Okay, I'll get started. And we're going to go to audio really quick right off the bat. But essentially, I was driving in listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Very sad that their ESPN's getting rid of that show. But they always have great discussions regarding the NFL. You know, we're in the dog days right now of who are the top five wide receivers in the NFL? Who are the top five quarterbacks in the NFL? And, you know, ranking everybody. So I'm sitting on the producer's chair this morning. Robbie Stanley got here. It's about 5:45. And they do the top five running backs in the NFL. Nick, head to the audio.
Number five.
Aaron Jones, Green Bay Packers. Here's a guy who rushed for 1,100 yards, averaged about 5.3 yards a carry. Couple touchdowns on the reception side. You know, when you look at him, he's a dual threat out of the backfield. He can run between the tackles on the perimeter. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can block, pick up blitz protection. Gave Green Bay an opportunity and a chance when this guy was on the offensive side of the ball for them. I like Aaron Jones sitting at five.
Number four.
Saquon Barkley at four. We've seen Saquon Barkley when he's in on the field for the Giants and when he's not on the field for the Giants, what the Giants look like. Max obviously would have him as number zero, higher than number one.
That's right.
If he had the opportunity to. 1,300-yard rusher, 4.4 yards a carry, 10 touchdowns. Some of those long runs, some of those one-yard plunges. Caught the ball out of the backfield, 57 grabs. We know he can do both. Dual threat.
Number three.
Number three, Nick Chubb and the Cleveland Browns, a 1,500-yard rusher despite splitting time with Kareem Hunt, okay? The offensive side of the ball didn't have Deshaun Watson. Jacoby Brissett was the quarterback, so imagine the pressure that was on him in terms of the running game. He did some just tremendous things. His value is extremely high. He won't be happy with me sitting at three, I'm sure.
Number two.
Number two, Christian McCaffrey, Mr. Do-It-All, whether it was in Carolina or San Francisco. He's a guy that if he was completely healthy throughout the season, he could pick him up and put him down. Statistically, he'll probably never be a 1,800-yard rusher, 1,900-yard rusher, but he does so much both in the run game and in the passing game. He's such a threat. That's why San Francisco, immediately when he was available, went out and got him.
Number one.
Number one for my liking and my money last year and coming into this year, Josh Jacobs. Of the Raiders, 1,600-yard rusher, plus leading the National Football League last year, averaged about 5 yards a pop, 12 touchdowns for an offense that struggled at times throughout the course of the season. Will he remain at number one? This remains to be seen. There are some guys that potentially could be on the list, but these are the top five. Let me hit it with you, starting with Josh Jacobs at one, Christian McCaffrey at two, Nick Chubb at three, Saquon Barkley at four, and Aaron Jones at five. And I'm sure there's people out there, Jay, that's going to take some issues with my list, starting with Max Kellerman.
Well, there's always issues with the list. I mean, the only thing is I know that Derrick Henry had a down year for the first time in his career, but I mean, he's a top five running back in the league to me. I mean, all he did was rush for 13 touchdowns. I mean, the guy had rushed over 1,500 yards in a down year.
Keyshawn Johnson. Derrick Henry is not on your top five running backs in the NFL, and Aaron Jones is? I listened to that this morning, and my jaw dropped. And Jay Will saying he had a down year. Yeah, he had a down year. He was still second in the NFL in rushing.
Didn't have a down
year. That's what I know.
He rushed for 1,500 yards.
And he had his most productive year receiving. I mean, we saw so much from Derrick Henry in the receiving game this year, where combined, Derrick Henry had 1,936 yards rushing and receiving, 13 touchdowns. That's only behind Josh Jacobs combined, had 2,053. I am sorry, but Keyshawn, how do you not have Derrick Henry in your top five running backs? And you're going to give Nick Chubb the benefit of Deshaun Watson only being out there for half the season, splitting time with Jacoby Brissett? Well, how about Derrick Henry being out there with Tannehill not there half the season and Malik Willis being your starting quarterback and him still? I mean, look at the Houston Texans game where he rushed for over 200 yards. I mean, you got to give Derrick Henry that benefit of the doubt. You got to give Derrick Henry the benefit of the doubt of still being the second leading rusher in, well, right behind Josh Jacobs in the NFL rushing, and the only offensive threat that the Tennessee Titans had last year, and the box stacked on him every single time. I mean, I was baffled when I saw that. And I understand Derrick Henry is not viewed like a Saquon Barkley because he isn't as, you know, involved in that receiving game. But if you actually look at what Derrick Henry did last year and how involved he did become in the receiving game, I mean, combined he had just under 2,000 yards rushing and receiving. He became, you know, more of a factor in the receiving game. And a lot of people look at this Tennessee Titans team because of the back half of the season. They were really bad. And I also need to say something. He didn't play in the Thursday night football game. The Thursday night football game against the Cowboys. And he still was second in rushing in the NFL, just behind Josh Jacobs. I mean, I do not understand how Aaron Jones, no disrespect, but Derrick Henry was left off the list. Keyshawn, come on, man. Come on.
Come on, man.
Come on. I mean, I saw that this morning and I was, my jaw dropped. I mean, you look at this list and I understand the Titans aren't a flashy team. I understand they had a 7-game losing streak towards the end of the year. But look at the situation he was in.
Right.
Derrick Henry was the only offensive threat that Tennessee had last year. Ryan Tannehill only played for a portion of the season, and then Derrick Henry had Malik Willis as his quarterback and Josh Dobbs. I mean, a very much raw rookie and a career backup. So if you're going to give Nick Chubb the benefit of the doubt with Jacoby Brissett and Deshaun Watson, that situation in Cleveland, you got to give Derrick Henry the benefit of the doubt. I mentioned the only offensive threat. The box was stacked against him. And he was rushing behind one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. I mean, I think Ryan Tannehill was one of the most sacked quarterbacks again last year in the NFL. So, okay, you take that into effect. And then you just look at the production. Second in the NFL, rushing, and then combined, receiving, 1,936. I mean, and 13 rushing touchdowns. I don't understand. Give Derrick Henry. He is the king. He is a top five running back in the NFL, and I would put him as a top two top running back in the NFL.
All right. We got a lot to unpack here. A ton to unpack. I want whatever Keyshawn's smoking because no, Keyshawn. Bad Keyshawn. We want your thoughts, too. A lot of them are already weighing in. This is very good. 615-737-1025. Keyshawn Johnson does not have Derrick Henry in his top five running backs in the league right now. I'll give my thoughts on this coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezvik, the reporter Nick Keyser with you on this Tuesday. We'll have more draft flavor coming up in just a few minutes with Emma Lingen from Nashville Predators. But discussing Keyshawn Johnson's thoughts this morning on Keyshawn J. Will and Max on ESPN Radio, ranking his top five running backs in the league right now. Aaron Jones at number five. Number four was
Saquon Barkley.
Number three, Nick Chubb. Number two, Christian McCaffrey. Number one, Josh Jacobs.
Yeah!
No Derrick Henry. No, Derrick Henry.
Listen, if you don't want to put him as your top running back, that's fine. If you like a guy more like a Christian McCaffrey, like a Saquon Barkley, right? We see a lot of them in the receiving game. But I will say Derrick Henry did have his biggest year receiving last year, and I think that that could be something we see more of, you know, as his career continues to go on. But I'm sorry, you can't put Aaron Jones in there and not Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he is not a, like,
So my thought is, number one, yeah, it's asinine to even think that he wouldn't be in there. And, like, I know Jay was defending it or defending Derek and saying, like, he should be in there. But I think it's hilarious, and we've been guilty of it, when people say, well, I know he had a down year last year. He carried the ball 349 times, which is the second most in his career. He rushed for 1,538 yards, which is the third most in his career, too shy of what he did in 2019. And he was pretty damn good in 2019.
Oh, and he didn't Everybody play a game.
Right. He didn't play a game. He played 16 games or 15 games in 2019, 16 last year, didn't play the 17th game. In 2019, with that stat line, 303 carries, 1,540 yards, 16 touchdowns, everybody was calling him the best running back in the league. Mm-hmm. And then he had the 2,000-yard year the next year, and then he got hurt. He was on pace for even to shatter the record.
Oh, yeah, he was.
And then he got hurt and was just shy of 1,000 yards. And then bounces back, second most carries in his career, and we want to call it a down year, 13 touchdowns, and had the best receiving year he's ever had in his career.
Yep.
I mean, all-purpose yards, he was just shy of 2,000.
Yeah, I mean, receiving yards, 398 receiving yards combined, rushing and receiving, he had just under 2,000 yards. I mean, yeah. I would say that's pretty darn good. I mean, and here's the thing, too. I think when people look at Derrick Henry and they look at Tennessee and they look at the 7-game losing streak.
Sure.
They look at this situation and they don't truly look at what he actually did for this team. I mean, losing A.J. Brown, you know, made Derrick Henry's job so much harder. I mean, you know, we talk about what this offense could look like if you add a DeAndre Hopkins. It spreads things out. It makes everybody else's jobs easier. Well, you know, when you take away a guy like that, it makes Derrick Henry's job so much harder. I mean, I mentioned before in the last segment, you know, defenses will just stack the box because they realize that Derrick Henry is the biggest threat that you have on offense.
Right.
So you add that. You add that he was rushing behind one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. His production was at the top of the NFL. So when we hear this down year, are people just saying it because Tennessee was losing?
Yeah, probably.
I mean,
but I think this text is also very true. Unnamed texter says, outside of Middle Tennessee, the Titans are irrelevant. I travel all over and the Titans might as well not exist to most. And, you know, I know there are a lot of Titans fans that don't want to hear that, but unfortunately, I think it's true. I mean, to me, what this says is, okay, let's look at this for a second. His top five, Aaron Jones, played where?
Packers.
Okay.
Big brand.
Right. Saquon Barkley, played where?
New York Giants.
Right. Third was
Cleveland Browns, Nick Chubb,
but had a lot of
Deshaun
eyes on them. And Deshaun.
Yeah, everything.
Christian McCaffrey.
San Fran.
And then Jacobs led the league in rushing, and he's in Vegas. So, I mean, that right there tells you. Keyshawn doesn't watch the games. I like Keyshawn Johnson. I think he does a great job. I think it's a mistake for ESPN to blow that show up.
I love that show, I know.
But because they haven't been able to find a good morning show since Mike and Mike, but that's just another rant for another day. But like, Keyshawn doesn't watch the Titans. It's very clear. There's stuff he has said in the past that I sit here and go, like, dude, you're not watching the games.
Well, and I think, you know, I don't think it's just him. I think, too, right, the national narrative, not only about this team, but I'll add Ryan Tannehill into the conversation. So many people, you know, only watched Ryan Tannehill in that Cincinnati Titans game.
Right.
That was a couple years ago because it was a primetime playoff game. you know, think about how many primetime games the Titans actually get in a regular season. I mean, we were sitting here thinking, are they going to get any this year? Are they going to get any primetime games this year? You know, and they end up getting two. They've got Thursday Night Football in Pittsburgh, and they've got Monday Night in Miami. But, you know, the reality is this team is playing at noon on Sundays a majority of the time. And, you know, if you're not a NFL junkie and you have the ticket pass, you know, you're not watching them. And a lot of eyes aren't on them. You are watching, you know, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, maybe the 3:30 game on Sunday, and then you're watching your specific team in the morning. And if it's not on your cable package or you don't have, you know, Red Zone or NFL ticket, I mean, you are not watching them. And if they're a team that you don't see constantly in a primetime slot, like the Chiefs, even the Packers, a big brand team, then you don't really know, you know, what this team is. You wouldn't know that this 7-game losing streak didn't have anything to do with Derrick Henry. It had everything to do with the fact that your starting quarterback was injured. And the reason you lost 7 games straight is because you were starting then a rookie and then a career backup in Josh Dobbs. But just because they had a 7-game losing streak does not mean Derrick Henry had a down year. And I think so often people look at this team and think, oh, they lost, so Derrick Henry probably had a bad year. But the reality is, I mean, you look at 2021 when Derrick Henry got injured, you were able to keep that production up when you added Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard. You were able to keep that running back production up. But when you lose a quarterback, the position is completely different.
Sure.
Like last year, you weren't able to do it. Derrick Henry, still, his production was there. He was still performing as one of the top guys in the league, but you lost your starting quarterback.
Yeah, and the only thing that I will say in any regard to Derrick Henry is has lost a step or is not the same is, you know, when you watched him, you could definitely see that the burst that had been there 2 years ago wasn't the same. But he still rushed for 1,500 yards.
I mean, do you think Nick Chubb is better than him? I mean, it's
no.
I don't.
No. Nick Chubb is not better than him.
I mean,
Aaron Jones is not better than him.
No,
Christian McCaffrey is a different back. Like, they're not even in the same category. No. Christian McCaffrey is like a wide receiver playing running back.
Yeah, and then Saquon is kind of in between McCaffrey and a Derrick Henry.
Saquon, all this love for Saquon right now. Like, all this love for Saquon. Have we not looked at what he's done his entire career? I mean, he came on the scene and he was hot and everybody was like, oh, here we go. He's going to be awesome. And then he was hurt for like 2 or 3 years. And then did he have a resurgence last year? Yes. Good for him. Congratulations.
Stack the ears.
He's not better than Derrick Henry.
No.
I mean, Nick and Gallatin, Keyshawn doesn't know what he's talking about. He didn't even have Justin Jefferson in his top 5 wide receivers
yesterday. Yeah, he didn't.
Does anyone take him seriously? That's true.
He didn't.
Oh,
because Robbie told me that.
Keyshawn, what are you doing, man? Like, again, I hear stuff like that, and it makes me wonder, are you just saying this just to get a reaction or what?
I mean, and Jay Will, right after he listed his top 5, Jay Will was like, well, I mean, you got to add Derrick Henry to that. But, I mean, I don't know. Are people just, like, forgetting about him? Like, I genuinely am asking. Like, are people forgetting what he did? I mean, I understand he had the foot injury when they were the one seed, but they still were the one seed. And then, yes, they had a down year. The entire team had a down year. Not Derrick Henry, but the team, as far as winning and losing games, had a down year under Mike Vrabel. You fired your GM. No crap, right? I mean, you had a down year. It was a bad year.
Fired the offensive coordinator, fired the offensive line coach, like,
I mean,
all
it,
those things.
It really baffled me. I was emailing with the Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max producer this morning, and I was like, I need that audio because I got to go on a rant about this because, I mean, maybe, and I'm not trying to be a homer. Listen, I'm not even like a Titans fan. I just cover the team and work for the radio station.
I mean,
station,
you're about to be gone in 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be in a different city.
But, I mean, the fact that Derrick Henry it was not regarded as one of the top 5 running backs in the NFL this morning, I mean, I had to say something because, I mean, I put him above half the people on that list. I put him above Aaron Jones. I mean, that is just, I mean, if you're watching the stream right now, you see that I can't even come up with words, the fact that he was put above Derrick Henry. I put him above Saquon. I put him above Nick Chubb. Depending on what type of running back, you know, I get it. Christian McCaffrey, different types
of guys.
He's
at least third on this list.
Oh, my gosh. He's at least on the list.
Yeah, he's on the list.
Woo!
And Keyshawn.
And Keyshawn made the list.
Oh, man. That got my blood boiling.
And a lot of texters, too.
Well, I mean, you said this morning, hey, I got a rant on something Keyshawn said, and I purposely didn't listen to it because good. I'm like, oh, this should be good. And so I purposely didn't listen to it until we played it live, and you were right. Oh,
Ron texted and he said, let's be honest, Key don't like the Titans or Tennessee, period.
No, and I think he's probably right on that. But good rant, good discussion for sure. By the way, I just saw this. This is probably something that I care about and nobody else, but we learned the great term of rubbing is racing 33 years ago today when Days of Thunder was released into theaters, starring Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
I love Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise.
It's a great movie.
It's a great day.
It's a great movie. You should go see
I'll add that to your list.
Add that to your list of movies you need to see because it is a fantastic one. Coming up next, we're going to learn a little bit more about some of these prospects that could find their way to Smashville. Emma Lindgren, who covers the Predators for the Predators, went to the draft combine, has done some research on this. We'll get her thoughts on that, plus all the other moves that the Predators have made. That's next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic with you. NHL Draft Round 1 tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Of course, we will have tons of coverage with Draft Night in Smashville with Robbie Stanley, Willie Donick, Max Herz, and yours truly live at Bridgestone Arena. Our coverage presented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 429, Electronic Express, Oil Fire Whiskey, and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Somebody that will be running all over Bridgestone Arena, I am sure. Emma Lindgren of the Nashville Predators joins us now. Emma, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Emma.
Good morning, guys. I'm great. How are you?
I'm recovering from, you know, the draft party last night, but I'm ready. I'm ready for this thing to get going tomorrow. Excited that the industry is here and excited to see what incoming general manager Barry Trotz is going to do at number 15 and number 24. And let's start with that. He's listening. He said he wants to take big swings. Do you anticipate the Predators picking at those spots, or could you see some maneuvering?
I would say I think you're right. I think that definitely Barry is interested in taking some big swings. And he said, of course, he would love to be able to trade up and trade even into the top four in the first round if he could. But in order to do that, you need the right dance partner, right? You need someone who is going to be willing to negotiate that. And looking at the top guys in this year's draft class and the teams that are in those spots right now, it may not be Barry's decision. I think that those teams are pretty content to stay where they are. But you never say never, right? And I think that's kind of where they're at right now. David Poyle said yesterday, you know, we can expect the Preds to pick at 15 and 24, as planned. If they don't, it's going to be for someone they really like, which would require a really big move. But again, that requires their trade partners to be interested too. So that's kind of where we're at right now, and we'll see.
So when you look at some of these prospects, and I will fully admit that I am not as up to date on the prospects like some people are. I know you went to the combine, got a little bit of a look. Who stands out that could be a potential target at 15 for the Predators?
So that tends to be, it's kind of a mixed bag, and it I feel like it changes almost every day, and it depends on who you ask. But you know, one thing that's been said about this draft class, and it's true, is that it is extremely deep at the forward position, which is great, especially for a team who's picking at 15 and 24. Even if you end up that, you know, far down the order in the first round, there's still plenty of talent to choose from. One guy I think is actually interesting, though, is a defenseman out of Sweden, Axel Sandin Felica, and he is slotted to hopefully be available at 15, and it would be an interesting move for the Preds, for you know, considering they haven't drafted a defenseman in the first round since Dante Fabro in 2016, but knowing how deep the forward class is and how few defensemen there are, relatively speaking, he could be an interesting pick for them at 15. He is 18 years old. He was playing in Sweden's top pro league this year. He has a lot of upside on the power play, which is obviously something the Preds have been looking for and been targeting. So I think that could be an interesting guy to keep an eye out for. And then, of course, there are plenty of forwards, as I said. Gabe Perreault, whose father actually played for the Preds, Yannick Perreault, and you've got Nate Danielson, Matthew Wood out of UConn. I mean, there's really no shortage of opportunities for the Preds there.
Emma Lingen, reporter for the Nashville Predators, joins us. Now, Emma, you work very closely with the team. You obviously went to the Combine. You've been around them the last couple of days, especially as we gear up for the draft here in Nashville. Could you just give maybe the fans a picture or let them give them open the door a little bit to some of the, how do I word this? Basically just maybe the vibe around the team right now. They have a lot of draft picks as they head into this draft. They've made some significant moves, you know, starting at the trade deadline, obviously the Ryan Johansson move. And Barry Trotz has been very vocal as to, you know, we're not afraid to make big moves heading into this draft. Maybe what you see as the vision for this team moving forward.
Yeah, I think you're right. But one thing that Barry did say when I talked to him yesterday was, you know, yes, we're open to making big moves, but you don't want to make too many big moves and then have to be covering your tracks or trying to fill holes. You don't want to create holes when you don't have them. So I think that, you know, they're definitely going to be disciplined and smart with any moves that they do make heading into draft day tomorrow. But, I mean, the vibe is really positive. I think, you know, kind of looking at it right now, the sky's the limit for this team and this organization. I mean, the scouts have been here in the offices this week meeting, and you just see them. They're almost giddy with excitement. You know, they've got 13 picks to play with. That's a ton. So they're, and you look at all the talent in this year's class, it's going to be a really special draft class. And I think that, you know, adding those new pieces to the young pieces that the Preds already have that we saw the glimpse of at the end of the season last year, I think there's a lot of excitement around this team. You know, maybe not, you know, not saying that they're going to be making a run for the Stanley Cup tomorrow, but mm-hmm. pretty soon and sooner than one might expect for a team that's, you know, more or less in a reset or rebuild.
So you mentioned there, you know, reset, rebuild. Chase and I have been talking about that. Emma Lingen from the Nashville Predators joins us right now. You know, we saw a lot of the younger players get an opportunity to play towards the end of the season last year and make an impact on this team. And then you look at some of the veteran established players who are core pillars of this team, like a Roman Josi, like a Philip Forsberg. But another name that has come up is UC Saros. He's clearly one of the most valuable pieces that the Predators have, but also valuable around the entire NHL. Do you think that there's any possibility that he could be on another team after this week?
I think, like I said, you know, you never say never. However, mm-hmm. I think what I mentioned before about you don't want to create holes where you don't already have them. Mm-hmm. And UC Saros is the biggest reason that this team was as competitive as they were last year and, you know, kept them in the race. You know, they were playing meaningful hockey for 80 out of 82 games. And it was, you know, I think anyone would tell you that he was the primary reason for that. So I don't think they're, you know, I would not expect the team to be shopping him seriously. They'll listen to calls on him, but it would take a lot for them to give up Saros. And, you know, I think when you look at building a team, if you are in a rebuild, you know, if you're able to build from the crease out, you know, you have that goaltending, you're halfway there, really. And, you know, you're able to, it helps accelerate this rebuild, you know. This is why the Preds are not in a, you look at other teams around the league, like, you know, Chicago last year, for example, in, you know, total tear down mode, and the Preds are not there. And UC Saros is a big, big reason for that. So I would say, you know, again, I don't like to speak in absolutes during draft week because you never know what's going to happen.
You don't.
Again, if I were a betting woman, I would not bet on UC Saros being moved this week.
Well, I liked how you put that. You said when you have your goalie, you know, you essentially you're good from the crease out. So when you take a look at this team as a whole, Emma, where do you think is the biggest hole or biggest area of need that the Preds should address during this draft?
Well, it depends on where you're looking, right? If you're looking organizationally as a whole, there, you know, this team doesn't have a ton of organizational depth on the blue line. You know, the NHL level defensemen are great, they're solid, but it's not a position that you have a lot of depth in further down the organization. Of course, just this morning, about 30 minutes ago, we did sign Jake Livingstone to a two-year, two-way deal. He played a few games for us last year, so that's going to help there for sure. But, you know, that's something. And then, you know, at the NHL level, I think it's no secret this team, and Barry has said it numerous times, you know, they're looking for speed. They're looking for skill. They're looking for scoring. You know, so you really kind of want those dynamic forwards. You know, obviously you mentioned the Ryan Johansson move earlier. That, you know, moves the center off of the roster, but you have kind of the depth at center that you need. So, like, looking for more scoring on the wings, especially, you know, guys that can really put up points, particularly, well, at 5-on-5 and on the man advantage, because that was an area where they struggled last year.
Emma Lingen is with us. And real quick, cool to see Pekkarinen around last night and yesterday named European Development Coach and Scout. He's officially Coach Pex, which I think is an awesome nickname for him. But what does it mean to have him stay a member of the organization now in a different role?
Well, it's great. You know, I mean, you see Pekka walking around Nashville, and it's like you would think he's, you know, the biggest celebrity in the world, which he basically is here in Nashville. I mean, he's so beloved here for everything he does, for obviously everything he did on the ice with the team, but, you know, everything he does for the community, and he means so much to this community. And you know, he has a really special relationship with goalie coach Ben Vanderklok, with UC Saros, with Kevin Linkinen, that, you know, that Finnish connection that they have. And so it's really nice to kind of formalize that and have him, you know, here as part of the organization in a more formal way. And, you know, you can just tell from talking to him yesterday, he's incredibly excited to be back and be involved and, you know, be able to keep giving back to this organization where he spent his entire career.
Well, Emma, it's going to be fun tomorrow and Thursday, a busy few days, but we're excited about it. Thanks so much for doing this, and we'll see you at Bridgestone.
Thanks, Emma.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Emma Lingen joining us covers the team for NashvillePredators.com and does, you see her everywhere covering the Preds. We will come back, put a bow on things here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Hope you're having a great Tuesday so far. You can hit us up on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. Caller number three right now will win a pair of tickets to see the Struts at Brooklyn Bowl on July 9th. Caller three at 615-737-1025. Now, do we know, is Caroline Fenton going to make it in today, or is she still celebrating?
She's got to talk her stuff.
The victory lap, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, she's still celebrating her Tigers.
As
winning,
she should.
Winning the College World Series last night. A dominant win in the All-SEC final. But
I mean, you know, we've had the discussion over the last couple of weeks, thanks to our very own Joe Rexroad for writing an article about Tennessee's golden age, and I brought up LSU. Listen, that is three national championships in the last 3 years. When did football win? 18 or 19?
Yeah, it was because it was 2020, January 2020 when they played the title. Yeah, so it was the 19 season.
Okay, So, yeah, so that is...
That game was on the other day, actually. I watched it.
So there you go. So that is football. Football National Championship while Caroline was still there. That's Women's Basketball National Championship this past year, and now that's Baseball National Championship.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about a...
And Will Wade tried to buy one for men's team. Yeah. That didn't work.
Yeah, so. That, we're just going to slide that one to the side. They got a lot of rebuilding.
That was a strong-ass joke right there.
They got to rebuild the basketball program, considering they're like the only one I'd say that's pretty irrelevant right now, just as far as being in the national conversation. But, I mean, and LSU Gymnastics was really competitive this year. I mean, they have done some things. Obviously, they just hired Brian Kelly. They beat Alabama last year. Can't wait to see, you know, what it looks like after his first year. Now can we see maybe some of the guys that he's trying to get to come to LSU, you know, the recruiting, the guys that he's getting in the transfer portal. What does the team look like in the second year under him? But I think the golden age might need to go a little bit more south than Knoxville.
Yeah, I mean, at LSU, yeah, they're putting up hardware. I mean, so 100% I would say that they're in a golden age right now. But, yeah, congratulations to their baseball team for winning the national championship. It was well-earned.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I kind of felt like once they got to the final, even though Florida had given it a heck of a run, I thought that LSU was the better team, and they showed it, especially last night with that dominant performance.
100%. I was actually on a plane when they played the second game against Florida and landed and saw a score of 24-4. And I was like, what happened?
I know.
You know, and I think for a second people thought, oh, gosh, you know, can they come back and close this thing out? And then they obviously have a dominant performance, like you mentioned, Chase, yesterday. I do believe that, you know, the national championship game was really between them and Wake Forest over the weekend, just because Wake Forest and LSU were the only two teams that were ranked number one overall at all this season. So, you know, you take a look at that game. It was 0-0 for, what, 11 innings or something like that. So, I mean, they clearly were the best team. They had the best pitching, hitting. So, it's good. LSU getting another title.
So what do we think is going to happen starting tomorrow? The Predators sitting just under $20 million in cap space after the Johansson trade. So they got they can maneuver around and make some trades if they want to. I kind of anticipate that. 13 draft picks to work with, including two in the first round at 15 and 24. Barry Trotz has a lot at his disposal. And everything really gets, I mean, we could see some moves and stuff today, probably will. I know the Pierre-Luc Dubois sweepstakes is ongoing and different teams are involved with that. I don't anticipate the Predators doing that because he's going to want a long-term deal, and I think they need to be out of that business mm-hmm. right now.
I agree.
But where do you think this goes starting tomorrow?
Just from, you know, some of the people we've talked to, hearing from Emma, hearing from Barry Trotz, I mean, it's clear that they're interested in moving up. So if, you know, another team likes what the Predators are putting out there, which it will be hard because we've talked on so many times, you know, I know we talk so much about Connor Bedard, but this draft is very, very deep and it is very, very talented from top to bottom. I know that his name kind of shines above everybody else's in the clear number one overall pick, but, you know, this draft is stacked. You talk about top five players, right? Top 10 players. The Predators' first pick is at 15, so they're sitting a little bit outside of that. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they try and package something to move up into top 10, I would say. I mean, that is ideal. I think it's clear from what they've said that is something that they want to do. They want to try to move up. But it all comes down to, okay, which dance partner can you find? Which, that was a Barry term. You got to find somebody who wants to dance with you. So
yeah.
Can you find another team and can you work something out with them to ultimately move up? I agree with Emma. I don't foresee anything happening with UC Soros. I think if a team offers them something that they absolutely cannot turn down and it's, you know, just a blockbuster, you know, you have to say yes to something like that. But I don't see the Predators calling anybody. I see them just sitting to where they are. They've got leverage in this situation. They've got a lot of draft capital. And it really comes down to, you know, what are other teams willing to do in situations like this?
Right. It's, you know, what does the other team need? What does the other team want? But, you know, and then you can the Predators make some moves and get some sweeteners out of it that they could potentially use for another, you know, another deal. I mean, that's what you see a lot of times too, is you'll make a trade to make a trade. Like, you're making a trade to help facilitate another trade and acquire assets mm-hmm. that way. I would love a scenario where they move into the, you know, can move into the top four, the top five, because that guy could probably help you now, mm-hmm. you know. So
help you now to be in kind of that position where you don't have to tear it all down like the Blackhawks
right,
did.
Right.
You can still be somewhat competitive, but also keep building and adjusting that core. Can I read a text right now I think is very funny? So Joe Rexroad texted Caroline, Robbie, and I and said, it was a tweet, and it says, still giving Tennessee the title for the best athletics this year. Last place in men's basketball is disqualifying LSU. Same with TCU for women's basketball. Tennessee won the Orange Bowl, two Sweet 16s, Omaha, and Caroline said, congratulations to Tennessee for being good at everything and champions of nothing. Incredible,
hey,
Caroline.
Hey,
incredible.
That is not true, Caroline. Butch Jones dubbed them champions of life, okay? They are champions of life from their McDonald bags and
And then Joe and said, this is less of a shot at LSU and you, Caroline, more of a response to Michelle's golden age slander. There's no gold to be shown in any of Tennessee athletic, in any of their facilities right now. LSU has won. They have the gold. They have the trophies. So, Joe, take your orange hat off and go on vacation.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're taking 2 weeks off. So, I mean, like, what are we doing here?
I don't get it. They are not in a golden age.
No.
Let me scream it from the roofs.
They're not. They're in a resurgence.
Yes.
You have to go through the resurgence before you go through the golden age. But you got to do a little bit more to get to that point. I know. I enjoyed that. Enjoyed the article.
Being good, I enjoyed the article too. We know that Rexroad's a great writer. Being good at a lot of different sports is great, but the ultimate goal is to win championships.
Bingo.
And
they haven't done that
yet.
You
can't say they're being excellent when they're not winning the championship or getting to a Final Four. So that is my piece.
What? Who's the best athletic department in the SEC right now? I mean, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, Georgia. They've won two national championships in football. But
I mean, I'm putting LSU and Tennessee. Tennessee and LSU. I mean, the thing is for LSU, which kills them, is their men's basketball
Alabama
program right now.
I'd put Alabama up there, too. Basketball's been pretty good. We obviously know what football is.
Yeah, so
baseball
they
was pretty good this
they
year.
They have the big two, right? So Alabama has, you know, obviously football, you know, that's a no-brainer. That's probably revenues the most, right? If you look
sure.
at the SEC, and then obviously their basketball team is very, very good since they've hired Nate Oates. But I think if you look across the board in talking about men's basketball, women's basketball, football, baseball, and then those are pretty much the main four. But if you want to expand it to, you know, gymnastics is becoming huge in the SEC.
I'm saying the major
four,
the major sports, like football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and then you can even throw softball in there too.
Yeah.
I would say so. I think Alabama is certainly up there. Tennessee's surging, but again,
I mean, here's the thing.
Show me
here's
the gold.
Here's what Tennessee has though that not, you know, every other, not those other SEC programs that we mentioned. Every single one of those, softball, baseball, men's and women's basketball, and football of Tennessee's have been in the national conversation and
right.
nationally ranked. You can't say that about, so for LSU, it's like, oh, you get nicked for men's basketball because they're not.
Yeah.
For Alabama, it's, you know, baseball, right? So everybody kind of has that one that isn't quite up to it, whereas Tennessee
sure.
across the board, you know, they've all been nationally
like Georgia,
ranked or performed.
It's football.
Yeah, I mean, basketball's not even. I mean, they're down.
Yeah, but I mean, and like I'm asking athletic departments right now, not just football. With Georgia, yeah, they run football right
sure.
now.
Sure.
But asking athletic departments as a whole, you know, what that ranking would be. That's an interesting discussion that we can have. Tomorrow we'll be live at Bridgestone Arena for draft day and for Michelle's final show.
Oh,
with us. Her
there
final
may be
day.
Tears, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I mean, I know some things that are planned, and I got the over-under set at 30 seconds before that starts. So that,
well, if any word about my farewell is mentioned, it'll probably be about 0.2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So we will honor Michelle tomorrow and have fun with her before she goes off to new and exciting things. We'll be live at Bridgestone Arena getting you set up for the draft. It will be a long day tomorrow, but a fun day tomorrow for sure. Looking forward to that. Coming up next, Caroline Fenton will have her victory lap.
And she's got purple on.
She better. Purple and gold better be on. As she will have her victory lap, celebrate LSU's national championship. And I'm sure they'll talk about maybe some other things. It could just be an LSU show. You never know.
It should be. They're golden age.
Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Coming up next, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.